Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a stack of your sources, articles, research, our own notes, and really try to extract the most important nuggets of knowledge and insight. We want to help you get truly well-informed, you know, without the information overload. Our mission today is to cut through the noise and give you a crystal-clear understanding of a global player that's literally building the future of how we move. Ferrovial, S.A. This company, it's undergone a massive transformation, a strategic masterclass, really, in redefining itself for the modern economy.
Absolutely. And when you dig into these sources, what immediately jumps out isn't just a company's evolution. It's a really clear blueprint for how a legacy business can completely redefine itself for the future. We're going to dive into Ferrovial's journey today. Trace its path from its origins, you know, as a Spanish construction firm, to its current status as a premier global infrastructure operator. And there's this distinct and strategic pivot towards North America we need to talk about. We'll explore what genuinely drives their value, how they meticulously manage risk in these huge complex projects, and where their future growth engines are really located. This isn't just about the financials, so that's important. It's about understanding the backbone of modern transportation and, well, the smart money that's making it all happen. It's a compelling story. Adaptability, foresight, strategic courage, it's all in there.
Okay, let's unpack this fascinating journey then. Our sources reveal that Ferrovial, founded way back in 1952 in Spain by Rafael Del Pino y Moreno, started out building railways. That's over seven decades of history. Yep. So what was the core of this profound shift, this fundamental change in their very identity? How did they move from being a traditional builder to what they are today?
Well, what's truly fascinating here is the deliberate, I mean, really deliberate and strategic pivot. They moved away from what was, for a long time, a cyclical, often low-margin construction business. Think about it, right? You build a bridge, you get paid once, and then you're immediately on to the next project, constantly chasing new contracts. It's high risk, often low reward. They shifted towards acquiring, developing, and operating long-term infrastructure concessions. And this move, it fundamentally de-risked their earnings profile in a dramatic way.
Okay, so less chasing one-off jobs.
Exactly. Instead of just building a road and moving on, they're now operating that road or maybe an airport or whatever it might be for decades. This generates stable, predictable, and crucially, inflation-linked cash flows. The analogy I like is it's like shifting from being a contractor who builds individual houses, always looking for the next job site, to owning and managing a vast portfolio of rental properties. You get guaranteed recurring income streams. It's a completely different revenue model. Prioritizing long-term value over those short-term project fees.
That's a great analogy. It really helps visualize the shift from project-based income to ongoing revenue streams. It makes perfect sense. And the Horizon 24 strategic plan, that covered 2020 to 2024, right?
Yeah.
That really formalized this strategic redirection.
Yeah.
What exactly did this plan prioritize? And what did it mean for some of Ferrovial's older or maybe less strategic businesses? Were there some tough choices involved?
Horizon 24 was remarkably clear in its objectives. It explicitly focused on sustainable infrastructure as the absolute core of the business. That was the key. A defining pillar of this strategy was the systematic divestment of what they deemed non-core businesses, essentially. Anything that didn't fit this new focused vision. For instance, they completely exited their services division. That included environmental services, infrastructure services arms like AMI in the UK, Broad Spectrum in Australia.
Gone.
Wow, this sounds like significant businesses to sell off.
They were. And this wasn't just, you know, tidying up the portfolio or selling off some underperforming assets. It was a ruthless, decisive streamlining. They were channeling all their capital, all their expertise, exclusively into their highest value activities, those long-term infrastructure concessions. It unequivocally demonstrates a clear, long-term vision being executed with, well, precision. And yeah. Without sentimentality for older segments that just didn't fit that strategic imperative anymore. They weren't afraid to make the tough calls needed to achieve their new strategic goal. And the culmination of this whole strategic journey happened very recently, didn't it?
Yeah.
In 2023 and 2024. There was this major corporate reorganization, redomiciling the parent company to the Netherlands as Ferrovial SE, and then, critically, listing shares on the NASDAQ in the U.S. in May 2024.
Why was this so much more than just an administrative or legal change? I mean, for a company of Ferrovial's size, what did it really signify?
Oh, this move was a profound strategic statement. It definitively aligned Ferrovial's corporate structure, its capital market structure, with its economic reality, Our sources consistently highlight that its true value is future growth. It's overwhelmingly concentrated in North America. That's the powerhouse. That's where the big opportunities are, where they're generating the most significant returns.
So follow the money, essentially.
Yeah.
Basically, yes. By shifting its domicile to the Netherlands, which is, you know, a common corporate practice for international companies seeking neutral ground and crucially listing on the NASDAQ in the US, well, that gave Ferrovial significantly greater access to the deep, liquid, and frankly sophisticated US capital markets. These markets are absolutely crucial for funding its ambitious growth pipeline, especially in its most important region. Think about it. It's about positioning themselves where the vast majority of the opportunity is and where the capital needed to seize that opportunity truly lies. They literally move their financial home to be closer to where their value is being generated and where their future investments are going to flow. It signals complete dedication to that North American strategy.
Okay, so now that we understand this strategic shift and this bold corporate move, let's dive into where Ferrovial actually makes its money. Where's the engine room? The toll roads division, which they operate through their subsidiary Cintra, it's consistently described in our sources as the undisputed engine of value creation. I'm curious, what exactly are these managed lanes we keep hearing about? And why are they so central to Ferrovial's strategy? What makes them so valuable?
Managed lanes are a fascinating and highly specialized niche within the transportation sector, and Ferrovial has truly become a global leader here. It's quite innovative, actually. Imagine you're stuck in bumper-to-bumper rush hour traffic on a major highway. We've all been there. Managed lanes are dynamically priced lanes within that existing highway corridor. They offer drivers a congestion-free option for a variable toll.
So you pay to beat the traffic jam.
Exactly. And the model is brilliant because it does two things simultaneously. It optimizes traffic flow by incentivizing some drivers to use the tolled lane, which reduces congestion in the general purpose lanes. And it also optimizes revenue generation by adjusting those tolls based on real-time traffic conditions. Think of it like airline tickets or surge pricing for ride shares. The price adjusts dynamically based on demand. The goal is to keep traffic flowing smoothly and reliably in those lanes.
So it's not just a flat toll.
Not at all. It's not just about collecting tolls. It's about actively managing demand, ensuring traffic keeps moving, and offering a premium, reliable service to commuters who value their time. This allows Ferrovial to capture immense value from a persistent and growing problem: urban congestion. They're providing a solution people are clearly willing to pay for. That creates a very strong, responsive, and predictable revenue stream for them.
That makes so much sense. It's essentially turning the headache of traffic into a premium managed service.
Yeah.
Very clever. And within that toll roads division, the 407 EPR in Toronto, Canada, is consistently called Ferrovial's crown jewel. What makes this particular asset so special, so valuable to their portfolio? What's its enduring appeal?
The 407 ETR is truly exceptional for several reasons. It's why it gets called the crown jewel. It's a 108-kilometer all-electronic toll highway. It runs through the Greater Toronto Area, which is one of North America's fastest-growing regions.
Yeah.
But its most unique and valuable characteristic is an incredibly long concession. It runs all the way until 2098.
2098, wow, it's nearly another 75 years.
Exactly. It's an almost unheard-of duration. This extraordinary length provides exceptional long-term visibility into cash flows. It makes it an incredibly powerful and consistent cash flow generator for the company. Just look at the numbers. In 2023, it delivered a substantial $281 million in dividends to Ferrovial. That surged even further to $321 million in 2024.
Huge numbers.
Huge. And its traffic has shown robust recovery post-pandemic, plus impressive growth, up 14.6% in 2023, another 4.8% in 2024. That's driven by increased mobility in the region and even, interestingly, construction on alternative free routes, which pushes more people onto the 407. This is the kind of asset infrastructure investors dream of: predictable, multi-generational returns, a true anchor and consistent powerhouse for their entire portfolio.
Okay, I'm definitely seeing the pattern here. Long-term concessions, predictable cash flow. And this is where it gets really interesting, especially with their U.S. focus. Let's talk about the U.S. managed lanes. Where exactly is Ferrovial making significant inroads there? And what do the numbers tell us about their performance in these critical dynamic U.S. markets? Are they replicating that 407 ETR success story stateside?
They are, and it's quite impressive how they've applied that model. Ferrovial has cultivated a premier portfolio in high-growth U.S. metropolitan areas. It really showcases their expertise in these complex, dynamic systems. Take Texas. Their North Tarrant Express, NTE, the LBJ Express, and NTE 35W, all in the bustling Dallas-Fort Worth area, they're all performing incredibly well. These assets significantly benefit from the region's robust economic and demographic growth. I mean, more people, more jobs, more traffic, more demand for faster travel. It's a virtuous cycle for them.
And the pricing reflects that demand.
Absolutely. For example, in 2023, revenue per transaction, that's the average toll paid, grew by a remarkable 9.0% on the NTE and an even more impressive 15.4% on the NTE 35W. Think about that growth rate, significantly outpacing general inflation. It really shows the power of their dynamic pricing model in action. Plus, the NTE 3C extension opened ahead of schedule, which further boosted performance and highlighted their excellent project execution capabilities. Then move over to North Carolina. The I-77 Express Lanes near Charlotte, another standout. This asset actually has no price cap.
No price cap at all.
None, which allows for immense pricing flexibility based purely on real-time demand. And that led to astonishing revenue per transaction growth of 28.1% in 2023.
28%? That's incredible pricing power.
It really is. Imagine the demand for a faster commute needed to generate that kind of pricing. And then in Virginia, the I-66 Express Lanes, just outside Washington, D.C., they only opened in late 2022, but they generated a substantial $167 million in revenue in their first full year of operation. And crucially, a major milestone was hit in 2024. Both I-66 and I-77 paid their first dividends back to Ferrovial that totaled $89 million from I-66 and $205 million from I-77.
So they're turning the corner from investment to cash generation.
Exactly. It signifies their transition from being development phase projects, which require significant upfront investment, into mature cash generative assets. It's tangible proof of the success of Ferrovial's investment strategy in these high value, high demand corridors across the U.S. They're building a real powerhouse there.
That's a massive shift in their U.S. assets, moving from big investments to big returns.
Yeah.
Now, the airports division, that's also seen a significant strategic realignment, hasn't it? Mm-hmm. What was the major move here? And what does it tell us about Ferrovial's overarching strategy for its airport assets? I mean, Heathrow used to be such a big deal for them.
You're right, it was. For many years, Ferrovial's 25% stake in Heathrow Airport was a cornerstone of its portfolio, a very significant, globally recognized asset. But in a landmark strategic move announced in late 2024, Ferrovial revealed the sale of 19.75% of that stake, sold it to Ardian and Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund, the PIF.
Okay, so selling most of it off.
Almost all of it. This generated a very substantial capital gain, $2,023 million, over $2 billion. It leaves them with just a residual, non-strategic 5.25% holding. And they didn't stop there. They also announced the sale of their entire 50% stake in AGS airports. That's Aberdeen, Glasgow, and Southampton in the UK. So this clearly signals a pivot, a move away from owning mature, highly regulated UK airports towards greenfield development opportunities elsewhere.
Greenfield meaning building new stuff from scratch.
Exactly. Particularly in markets with maybe higher growth potential and perhaps crucially, less restrictive regulatory environments than they faced in the UK. It's a classic case of divesting from a valuable but perhaps less growth-oriented asset to free up significant capital for new, more strategic ventures. Cashing in their chips to bet big elsewhere.
And that elsewhere clearly includes their flagship airport project now.
Yeah.
The new Terminal 1 at JFK Airport in New York. What's the scale of this investment and how critical is it to Ferrovial's airport ambitions going forward? This feels like a major statement.
It is. This is a monumental and truly strategic entry into the coveted U.S. airport market for Ferrovial, a massive undertaking. They are investing significant capital into this project. They committed $214 million in 2023 and then another $469 million in 2024, specifically for this state-of-the-art terminal at JFK, one of the world's busiest air hubs.
So big money going in.
Big money, big project. And the sources say it's progressing impressively on schedule, with operations slated to begin in 2026. This isn't just an investment in a new terminal building. It's a powerful statement of intent. It signals their broader U.S. airport ambitions, their desire to be a major player in developing and managing critical airport infrastructure in one of the world's largest economies. It's a very different strategic play than holding mature, regulated assets like Heathrow. This is about being on the ground floor of new, large-scale development in a high-growth market, building the future, not just managing the present.
Then there's the construction division. We touched on this, but it sounds like it's been fundamentally repositioned. It's not just about profits anymore, is it? How has its role changed, and what's its real value now?
Exactly right. It's no longer just about generating a profit from building things for external clients. which, as you know, is often a low-margin, incredibly competitive business. Cutthroat, really. Its role has fundamentally shifted. It's now primarily a strategic enabler for their higher-value concession business. That's its main job. With major subsidiaries like Weber in the U.S. and Budimex in Poland, its primary function is to provide best-in-class design and build capabilities that directly support that high-value concession business.
So having the construction arm in-house helps them win the concession deals.
Precisely. This integrated approach creates a significant competitive advantage when they're bidding for complex public-private partnership, or PPP, projects. They don't just win bids based on clever financial structuring. They can execute the construction phase efficiently and reliably. They control quality, they control costs, all in-house. That gives them a distinct edge. And the division's financial health has also improved markedly. They had a record order book of $16.8 billion by year-end 2024. Their adjusted EBIT margin reached 3.9% in 2024, actually surpassing their 3.5% target. So while it's primarily an enabler, it's also a healthy, well-performing business unit in its own right, adding significant strategic value beyond just its own bottom line.
Okay, that makes sense. Finally, just a brief mention of their newest and smallest segment, energy. This seems like a fascinating new venture. What's their vision here? Are they trying to become an energy company too?
Well, it's early days, but yes, this division was explicitly created to capitalize on the vast and growing opportunities in the global energy transition. It's clearly a strategic move. It's a consolidation of all their existing energy-related businesses into a single unified division. The idea is to maximize synergies and really focus on this emerging area. An example of their early moves is their acquisition of the Maesee Solar the 5 photovoltaic project in Texas back in May 2024. It clearly shows them exploring new adjacent areas of infrastructure, things that align with global sustainability trends. It diversifies their long-term growth avenues beyond just traditional transport. They're anticipating future infrastructure needs and positioning themselves to meet them. Smart long-term thinking.
So when you put all these pieces together, the toll roads, the airports, construction, this new energy bit,
yeah.
What does the sum of the parts valuation tell us about where 4Fuel's true value lies geographically? It sounds like there's a big story there that the headline revenue figures might initially mask.
You've absolutely hit on a crucial point. It's often misunderstood when you just look at the surface of large, diversified companies. While 4Fuel's revenue is indeed geographically diversified, the USA brought in $2.9 billion, Poland $2.2 billion in 2023. For example, the true economic drivers, the core of the company's long-term value, are overwhelmingly concentrated in North America. It's quite stark, actually. An astounding 81% of the company's total equity value was attributed to its assets in the USA and Canada as of December 2023. That's according to analyst consensus.
81%. Just from the US and Canada.
81%. In stark contrast, the UK, despite its historical significance and, you know, the presence of Heathrow for so long, accounted for just 10% of the valuation after the recent divestments. This is a powerful illustration of the difference between where a company generates its current revenue and where its actual long-term value and future growth potential are perceived to reside by the market. This fundamental mismatch is precisely why 4Fuel executed that strategic pivot we discussed, to align its corporate structure with its primary value base in North America. They're putting their money and their corporate home where the most valuable opportunities clearly are.
Okay, let's zoom out a bit to the industry itself. 4Fuel operates within the global infrastructure sector. We're talking long-term investment horizons, massive capital requirements, significant government involvement, and public-private partnerships, or PPPs, are clearly dominant in this space. What exactly makes PPPs so attractive for delivering these huge, large-scale infrastructure projects? Why are they so prevalent globally?
Well, PPPs are incredibly powerful tools. They allow governments to leverage private sector capital, which is often more readily available, plus operational expertise and efficiency, to deliver complex, often vital projects. Projects that might otherwise be constrained by tight public finances or, frankly, bureaucratic limitations. It's designed ideally as a win-win scenario. The private partner, like 4Fuel, takes on key risks that they are typically better equipped to manage. Things like construction cost overruns, project delays.
Risks the public sector might struggle with.
Exactly. This transfers the burden from taxpayers to the private entity, which is then incentivized to complete the project on time and within budget. Why? Because of its long-term stake and its desire for those consistent cash flows we talked about. Canada, for instance, is a global leader in PPPs. They have a mature, robust framework that has successfully delivered numerous projects. It provides a stable and predictable environment for assets like Ferrovial's 407 ETR. And importantly for Ferrovial's strategy, the U.S. market is increasingly embracing PTPs. This is significantly fueled by that huge $1.2 trillion Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, the IIJA. This act provides substantial federal funding and crucial policy support, creating a massive tailwind for companies like Ferrovial looking to invest in modernizing America's infrastructure. It's a powerful mechanism for getting big essential projects done.
That makes perfect sense. So given this landscape, how does Ferrovial position itself competitively, especially in its core toll road segment where they made such a strong play with these managed lanes? What truly gives them an edge over other giants in this space?
Well, in the global arena of toll road operators, Ferrovial definitely competes with formidable giants, companies like Transurban, Vinci, big players. However, Ferrovial has truly carved out a distinct competitive advantage. It comes down to their pioneering role and their incredibly deep expertise in dynamically priced managed lanes, particularly in the U.S. This is not a commoditized business where anyone can just jump in and succeed. It's complex. It requires incredibly sophisticated traffic modeling, advanced dynamic pricing technology that reacts in real time, and crucially, the ability to navigate complex political hurdles and gain public acceptance in communities that might be wary of new tolls. That's a huge part of it.
The public perception piece must be tricky.
It absolutely is. Ferrovial's successful track record across multiple U.S. states has created a very high barrier to entry for competitors. It positions them as a preferred partner for transportation authorities who are seeking these advanced congestion relief solutions. They've essentially built a highly defensible market position in one of the most attractive segments of the global infrastructure market. It's almost like a proprietary niche because of their specialized know-how and proven execution.
And what about the construction division's competitive strength? You mentioned it's an enabler for the concessions business, but how does it actually stand up in what's generally considered a highly competitive, often low-margin industry?
Well, the construction industry as a whole is indeed highly competitive, often fragmented. Ferrovial's strength in this segment lies precisely in its strategic integration with its core concessions business. That link is key. Having a world-class in-house construction arm, including those major players like Weber in the U.S. and Budimex in Poland, allows them to significantly de-risk the most challenging phase of any PPP project, the development and build phase.
So they control the riskiest part better.
Exactly. The synergy is invaluable. It enables them to have more accurate cost estimation right from the outset. It means better management of execution risks throughout the project lifecycle, and it allows them to submit more aggressive and competitive bids on those complex design, build, finance, operate, maintain contracts, the DBFMs. These are incredibly comprehensive contracts where Ferrovial takes on everything, the whole life cycle: initial design, construction, financing the entire project, then operating and maintaining it for decades. It's a full commitment that means they have skin in the game for the long haul. Their success is tied to the project's long-term performance. This capability gives them a significant edge over purely financial infrastructure investors who have to rely entirely on third-party contractors. There, you can have less control over cost, quality, timeline. Ferrovial avoids that.
Okay, that integrated model makes a lot of sense for complex projects. Now, the airport sector is different, right? Often characterized by local monopolies, but also under intense regulatory scrutiny. How has Ferrovial navigated that competitive and regulatory landscape, especially considering those recent significant UK divestments we discussed?
You're right. The airport sector has its own dynamics. The UK airport sector in particular is notoriously stringent and heavily regulated. You have powerful bodies like the Civil Aviation Authority, CAA, and the Competition and Markets Authority, CMA. They have significant power over airport charges, investment levels, market structure. The history of regulatory interventions in the UK, including forced divestitures in the past to break up market dominance, really highlights the significant regulatory risk and the potential for limitations on profitability that companies face there.
So a tough environment to operate in.
A very tough environment. Ferrovial's strategic pivot away from Heathrow and AGS isn't just about selling assets. It reflects a clear move away from operating within that mature, highly competitive, and stringently regulated market. They're seeking greenfield development opportunities elsewhere. markets with potentially higher barriers to entry for new concessions, like the new terminal one at JFK. In those markets, the primary competition is really intense during the initial bidding phase for the concession award itself. It's less about ongoing operational battles with regulators over pricing and investment year after year. That offers a different and perhaps more predictable risk profile for generating those long-term returns they're looking for.
This brings us directly to regulatory frameworks and political risk. Our sources refer to Ferrovial's strategic shift towards North America as a form of regulatory arbitrage. Can you explain what that means in this context? Why is it considered such a smart strategic move?
Yeah. Regulatory arbitrage sounds complex, but in this context, it simply means strategically moving capital. Shifting investment from jurisdictions that are proving challenging or less favorable from a regulatory perspective to those that offer a more supportive and attractive environment for their specific business model, particularly the PPP concession model. In the U.S., states like Texas, Virginia, North Carolina, where Ferrovial is very active, have regulatory frameworks that are highly supportive of the PPP model. They like private investment in infrastructure.
They make it easier to do these deals.
Generally, yes. They have established clear and predictable processes for private partners. Their laws often encourage new tolled capacity as a key financing mechanism for infrastructure improvements. And crucially, these frameworks frequently allow for those long-term concession agreements and the dynamic toll pricing that Ferrovial specializes in. That gives them the revenue predictability and operational flexibility they need. Canada, too, with the 407 ETR concession, boasts one of the most mature and respected P3 legal and regulatory frameworks globally. Very stable. In contrast, the UK airport sector's stringent regulation and that history of intervention very likely contributed significantly to Ferrovial's decision to reduce its exposure there. So this strategic allocation of capital based on the regulatory environment, it's indeed a very smart and calculated play to optimize their risk-adjusted returns and ensure long-term profitability. They're essentially going where the regulatory winds are most favorable for their business.
Let's turn to Ferrovial's financial performance then. Looking over the past 5 years, say 2019 to 2024, what story do the numbers tell about the significant transformation we've been discussing, especially considering the disruptions of the pandemic in that period?
Yeah, the financial performance over this period really does clearly reflect the strategic transformation, along with, you know, the undeniable impact of the pandemic and the subsequent strong recovery. Revenue from continuing operations, that's the key metric here, has shown a powerful growth trajectory. In 2019, revenues were around $6,054 million. There was a dip in 2020, obviously, due to pandemic-related restrictions that hit mobility hard. But then revenue recovered strongly to $8,514 million in 2023. That was a solid 13.2% like-for-like growth year over year. And for the full year 2024, revenue continued that impressive upward trend, reaching $9,100 million. That's another 6.7% like-for-like increase.
So strong top-line growth coming out of the pandemic.
Definitely. This consistent top-line growth is clearly fueled by the robust traffic recovery and organic growth on their core toll roads, coupled with that record order book in their now repositioned construction division. The numbers really do validate their strategic choices.
And what about profitability? Has that also mirrored the shift in the business model? Are we seeing the benefit of moving into those higher margin assets?
Absolutely. The profitability figures truly showcase the increasing dominance of their high margin infrastructure assets. It's very clear. Adjusted EBITDA back in 2019 was unusually depressed, actually. It was only $121 million. But that was primarily due to a significant $345 million provision they had to take for potential losses on some U.S. construction projects.
Ah, an example of those older, riskier construction ventures.
It's exactly a legacy issue. But after that, it recovered strongly. Adjusted EBITDA accelerated to $991 million in 2023. That was a huge 36.1% increase year over year. And this powerful momentum continued right into 2024, with adjusted EBITDA reaching a very significant $1.3 billion. That's another massive 38.9% like-for-like increase. This powerful expansion in profitability, in margins, it's a direct and undeniable result of their strategic shift towards those higher value, more predictable concession assets. Now, net profit has been more volatile. You see more swings there due to one-off events, like a $410 million net loss in 2020 because of the pandemic's impact on traffic. But then it surged dramatically to $3.2 billion in 2024, significantly boosted, of course, by the substantial capital gains from that Heathrow investment. So yes, some volatility in net profit, but enormous underlying profit growth driven by the core operations.
Got it. Now let's turn to their balance sheet. Our sources describe a sophisticated barbell structure. What exactly does that mean for someone who doesn't live and breathe finance? And why is this particular financial approach so resilient? especially for a company doing such capital-intensive projects.
Right. This barbell approach is indeed a hallmark of sophisticated and resilient financial management, especially in the infrastructure sector. It's quite clever. Think of it like this. A barbell has heavy weights on either end, connected by a lighter bar in the middle. In Ferrovial's case, at the corporate level, that's the parent company, the bar is incredibly light. They maintain an exceptionally conservative balance sheet there. This is characterized by a substantial net cash position. They actually had more cash than debt at the group level, reporting ex-infrastructure net debt of negative $1.8 billion at year-end 2024. And high levels of liquidity, too, a robust $5.3 billion in 2024.
So a lot of financial firepower at the corporate level.
Immense financial flexibility. It allows them to pursue new opportunities, weather economic shocks, without batting an eye. That's the strong corporate bar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for the weights on the ends of the barbell, the infrastructure projects themselves, like their toll roads, their airports. They carry significant debt. These are huge projects. They require debt financing. But critically, this debt is ring-fenced at the project level.
Ring-fenced, mm-hmm. meaning separate.
Exactly. This project-level debt is non-recourse to the parent company. Non-recourse means that if a specific project runs into financial difficulties, only that project's assets and cash flows are at risk to repay its debt. Not the entire Ferrovial Group's balance sheet. It's like having separate mortgages for each rental property you own. If one property runs into trouble, the lender can only go after that property, not your overall financial house or your personal savings. Your other assets are protected.
Right.
This structure effectively isolates project-specific financial risks. It prevents distress at one asset, say one toll road, from impacting the solvency or financial health of the broader group. It's a brilliant way to pursue these large, capital-intensive projects, which inherently involve risk, without jeopardizing the parent company's overall financial stability. It's very smart risk management at scale.
That's a super clear explanation. So they can take these big bets on individual projects without putting the whole company at risk. That makes sense.
How disciplined is Ferrovial's capital allocation strategy in practice, then? Are they effectively balancing that reinvestment needed for growth with consistently returning capital to shareholders? How do they strike that balance?
Management has demonstrated a very clear and disciplined framework when it comes to capital allocation. You can see it in their actions. Their strategy expertly balances reinvestment for future growth with providing consistent returns to shareholders. They rewarded shareholders quite handsomely, actually. $250 million returned in 2023, and that figure surged to $831 million in 2024.
A big jump in shareholder returns. A very big jump. And this includes their unique, flexible dividend program. Shareholders have the choice. They can opt for cash or receive new shares instead. This gives valuable flexibility to the company. They can conserve cash if needed, maybe for a major new project or acquisition, while still satisfying shareholder demand for returns. It's quite innovative. Additionally, they've been quite active with share buyback programs. They initiated one of up to $500 million in late 2023 and then announced another $500 million program for 2025. This shows a real commitment to returning excess capital when appropriate. It demonstrates confidence in the company's underlying value and its long-term cash flow generation capabilities.
And where are they primarily putting that capital back to work for future growth? Yeah. What are the key areas of investment that are shaping Ferrovial's future portfolio right now?
Well, a very significant portion of their capital is strategically allocated to funding their robust growth pipeline. And no surprise here, it's particularly focused on North America, which we've established as their core value driver. In 2023, for instance, $454 million was invested. Primarily, this went into equity injections for the new Terminal 1 at JFK and also into the ongoing I-66 and NTE3C managed lanes projects in the U.S. Looking into 2024, their committed capital for investments totaled an even larger $1.6 billion. That's a big commitment.
$1.6 billion. Where did that mainly go?
It was highlighted by two major moves, really. First, a $710 million acquisition of a 24% stake in IRB Infrastructure Trust in India. That marks a strategic expansion into a key emerging market with massive infrastructure needs. And second, a further substantial $469 million equity injection into the JFK New Terminal 1 project, continuing to feed that major development. This systematic reinvestment is funded by their strong operating cash flows and, crucially, the proceeds generated from their active asset rotation strategy selling off mature assets. This effectively creates a powerful self-funding engine for sustained growth, reducing their reliance on external financing. And while specific historical return on invested capital, or ROIC, figures aren't detailed in the materials we reviewed, it's clear that the entire strategic direction of Ferrovial is fundamentally geared towards improving these returns. By systematically divesting from those lower margin services and traditional construction segments, and then strategically reallocating that capital into high margin, long life infrastructure concessions with strong pricing power, while management is actively optimizing the company's capital base.
It's all designed to generate higher, more sustainable long-term returns on the capital they deploy. And the increasing dividend distributions we're seeing from flagship assets like the 407 ETR and the U.S. managed lanes, that's very tangible evidence of this successful capital deployment into projects that are clearly delivering high returns and justifying the whole strategic pivot.
So with all these strategic moves, this optimized balance sheet, this clear capital allocation, what does the future hold for Ferrovial's growth? What are the strategic drivers that will propel them forward in the coming years? How are they identifying the next big opportunities?
Well, their future growth is predicated on a clear and very focused strategy. It's essentially more of the same, but doubling down. The development of greenfield transport infrastructure with an emphatic concentration on the North American market. They plan to continue leveraging their unique integrated platform, that combination of Cintra's financing and development expertise, coupled with the top-tier execution capabilities of Ferrovial Construction. That synergy allows them to win and efficiently deliver complex, high-value projects. The primary target market continues to be managed lanes in the U.S. That's driven by compelling demographic and economic fundamentals in regions like Texas, Virginia, Georgia, places where urban and suburban congestion is a significant and growing problem, a problem their solutions directly address. They're essentially building the solution to a traffic problem that's only getting bigger in many U.S. cities.
Makes sense to focus where the need is greatest. And what does their current project and bidding pipeline look like? Are there specific opportunities we should note? Perhaps new states or regions they're targeting for these managed lanes?
Management commentary consistently describes a unique pipeline of potential managed lanes projects in the U.S. That suggests a rich vein of future opportunities they're actively pursuing. Key projects in their current sites include being shortlisted for the I-285 East Express lanes in Atlanta, Georgia. That's a major project in a rapidly growing metropolitan area. They've also submitted a request for qualification for the I-24 Southeast Choice Lanes near Nashville, Tennessee. That's significant because it marks a strategic expansion into new states for their managed lanes model, testing the waters beyond their current strongholds.
Expanding their geographic footprint in the U.S.
Exactly. And they also submitted an offer for the SR-400 project, also in Atlanta, back in May 2024. That reinforces their focus on Atlanta as a key growth hub for them. Now, while the overwhelming focus is North America, it is worth noting that a consortium led by Cintra was awarded the 30-year Lima Peripheral Ring Road concession in Peru in April 2024, an estimated $3.4 billion project. This indicates a willingness to selectively pursue highly attractive, large-scale projects outside its core market, but only when the opportunity is truly compelling and aligns perfectly with their specific concession expertise. They're not blindly chasing every project worldwide, but focusing on the highest potential value, primarily in North America.
Right. Selective international plays, but core focus remains North America. We've talked quite a bit about capital allocation and how they're fueling growth. How does Ferrovial's asset rotation strategy fit into its broader growth plan? It sounds like a critical element for a company constantly seeking new high-value projects.
Oh, asset rotation is, without a doubt, a cornerstone of their growth strategy. It's a highly disciplined approach to capital recycling, and they seem very good at it. It fundamentally involves divesting mature assets, assets that have maybe reached peak valuation or have lower growth potential going forward, or those with less strategic fit now, and then systematically redeploying the capital generated from those sales into new, higher return opportunities. This creates that powerful self-funding mechanism for growth we mentioned. It significantly reduces reliance on external capital markets, like issuing new shares or taking on excessive corporate debt. It allows them to crystallize value from their existing portfolio, basically. Take the profit from assets that have matured and channel it directly into the next generation of value-creating projects for shareholders. It's a continuous strategic portfolio optimization process, very dynamic. And the period between 2022 and 2024 has been particularly active in this regard. Can really see the strategy in action. On the divestment side, we saw them complete their exit from the services division with the sale of Servio.
More notably, there was that landmark sale of the 19.75% stake in Heathrow, bringing in roughly $2 billion, plus the agreement to sell their 50% stake in AGS Airports in the UK. And they also sold a smaller 5% stake in their Indian partner, IRB Infrastructure Developers. Now, on the reinvestment side, where did that money go? It was put straight to work. They acquired that 24% stake in IRB Infrastructure Trust in India for $710 million. They committed significant equity injections into their flagship JFK New Terminal 1 project, another $469 million in 2024. And crucially, in 2025, they even doubled down on their very best asset. They acquired an additional 5.06% stake in their core Canadian asset, the 407 ETR, for approximately CAD $1.99 billion. That's about $1.3 billion. So it shows a very clear strategy, selling the old to buy the new, and even increasing their stake in their very best existing assets that continue to deliver immense value. It's textbook capital recycling done well.
That's a really comprehensive approach to managing their capital and portfolio. Finally, let's talk about innovation and digitalization. How is Ferrovial positioning itself for future mobility trends, things that might seem quite far off for a traditional infrastructure company? Are they just building roads and airports, or are they thinking much bigger picture?
They are absolutely thinking much bigger. They're actively investing in innovation to secure a long-term competitive advantage, recognizing that the infrastructure landscape is constantly evolving. It's not just about asphalt and concrete anymore. Their digital transformation efforts, guided by initiatives like Digital Horizon 2024 and its successor, Read It 2027, integrate cutting-edge technologies like artificial intelligence, AI, and cloud computing directly into their operations and planning.
So not just buzzwords, but actual applications.
Exactly. They're pursuing tangible initiatives. For example, their AI Via initiative. This aims to develop 5G-enabled road corridors specifically designed to support connected and autonomous vehicles. Imagine roads that can actively communicate with self-driving cars, enhancing both safety and traffic management capabilities in the future. That's what they're working on. They've also established a groundbreaking partnership with Lilium. Lilium is a developer of electric vertical takeoff and landing aircraft EVTLs, sometimes called flying taxis. Ferrovial is partnering with them to plan and build vertiports, essentially mini airports for this emerging urban air mobility sector in the U.S. This positions them right at the forefront of a nascent but potentially transformative transportation sector.
Wow, vertiports, that's definitely thinking ahead.
It is. And beyond these exciting, perhaps more futuristic ventures, they are also leveraging data analytics extensively today to optimize operations across their existing assets. Everything from fine-tuning that dynamic toll pricing in real time to significantly improving efficiency and safety in their construction processes. This is all about staying well ahead of the curve in the rapidly evolving landscape of infrastructure and future mobility. They're anticipating where we'll be in 10, 20, even 30 years, and positioning themselves to be a key player in that future. #, understanding the value and the risks to consider.
Okay, so we've covered the strategy, the portfolio, the financials, the future. Let's try to bring it together. When we consider Ferrovial's market value, our sources consistently suggest us sum of the parts, or SOTP. Valuation is the most appropriate way to look at them. Why is that the preferred method for a company like Ferrovial? And what does that SOTP analysis reveal about the company's underlying value? What does the market really care about when valuing this company?
Right. An SOTP approach is ideal for valuing Ferrovial precisely because it's effectively a conglomerate, right? It's a collection of distinct businesses, each with its own unique risk profile, its own growth prospects, different capital intensity. By separately valuing its key segments, toll roads, airports, construction, we get a much clearer and more accurate picture of where the true value resides within the company, rather than just looking at a blended multiple. And the analysis from our sources, it's strikingly consistent. It reveals that Ferrovial's market value is almost entirely derived from its infrastructure assets. Analyst Consensus, for instance, attributes an astounding 81% of the company's equity value just to its toll roads division. Another 10% comes from airports.
So over 90% from toll roads and airports alone.
Exactly. And the construction division, it contributes minimally to the equity valuation, just 2%, according to Consensus. This means the market efficiently values Ferrovial primarily as a pure-play infrastructure operator. The construction arm is largely seen as an integrated, enabling function that adds low direct value to the equity, despite generating a majority of the company's consolidated revenue. The market's focus, the value driver, is squarely on those long-term, cash-generative concessions. That's where the real money is perceived to be.
That distinction between where the revenue comes from and where the actual equity value sits is really crucial to understand. Okay, and what about Ferrovial's dividend yield and the long-term view of their assets? How sustainable is that shareholder return, considering the massive upfront investments these projects require?
Well, the trailing 12-month dividend yield has been hovering in the range of about 1.5% to 1.7%. Not super high, but very reliable. And this yield is robustly supported by the substantial and crucially predictable cash dividends that flow upstream from their mature infrastructure assets. We're talking about their flagships like the 407 ETR and those U.S. managed lanes. Collectively, they distributed a significant $947 million to the parent company in 2024 alone. That's nearly €1 billion in cash dividends from just those core assets.
Solid cash generation feeding the dividend.
Very solid. And the sustainability of this dividend is considered exceptionally high. Why? Primarily due to the incredibly long duration of these concessions. Remember, the 407 ETR concession extends all the way to 2098, almost another 75 years of potential cash flow. Furthermore, these assets have those built-in toll escalation mechanisms. They're often directly linked to inflation, or in some cases, can even exceed the rate of inflation. That provides a powerful natural hedge against rising costs and ensures these are truly long-life, cash-generative assets, assets that can sustain returns for decades to come. So this isn't a speculative payout. It's grounded in very predictable, very long-term cash flows.
Okay, that sounds pretty solid. But of course, no investment comes without risks, even in seemingly stable infrastructure. What are the key operational and project execution risks Ferrovial faces as it continues to grow and take on these massive, complex projects like JFK?
You're absolutely right. Even with their robust strategy and financial structure, risks remain. Construction and completion risk is always present with large-scale greenfield projects like the new Terminal 1 at JFK. It's just inherent. Significant cost overruns or major delays on such projects could materially impact profitability. We saw an example of this with that $345 million provision Ferrovial had to take back in 2019 for potential losses on some U.S. construction projects. It shows that even the best can encounter challenges during construction. Then there's traffic and demand risk. This is absolutely crucial for their core business. Revenue directly correlates with traffic volumes, right? And traffic is sensitive to broader economic cycles, fluctuations in fuel prices, even changes in commuting patterns like the increased work-from-home trends we saw accelerated by the COVID-19 pandemic. While their assets are essential infrastructure, a prolonged recession would still be a significant headwind for traffic growth. Lastly, there are project-specific operational risks. Things like the immense technological complexity of running those dynamically priced managed lane systems, or maybe the contractual need to maintain minimum speeds on certain concessions to avoid penalties. Even public perception can become an operational risk, as seen with issues like road debris during the I-66 construction, which drew public complaints and required careful management.
Beyond operations, what about the financial risks? Things like interest rates, inflation, currency exposure. How do these broader economic factors weigh on a company like Ferrovial that operates globally and is so capital intensive?
These are definitely key financial risks to monitor. As a highly capital intensive business, Ferrovial and its individual projects utilize significant amounts of debt, mostly at the project level, as we discussed. A sustained rise in global interest rates would naturally increase financing costs for new projects, and it would also make refinancing existing debt more expensive when it comes due. This could potentially compress their returns and potentially impact asset valuations. However, they actively mitigate this risk. Their policy is to use predominantly fixed-rate debt at the project level, locking in rates for long periods. They also use interest rate hedging instruments to manage exposure. Inflation risk, while certainly a concern for rising construction costs, is largely mitigated for their core toll roads division, which is the biggest value driver. Most of their concession agreements, as we noted, contain clauses allowing toll rate increases linked to or even exceeding inflation. That provides a powerful natural hedge for their most valuable assets. And with the vast majority of their value and cash flow generated in non-euro currencies, primarily U.S. dollars, Canadian dollars, British pounds, before the sales, they do face currency exposure when translating those earnings back into euros for reporting. But they manage this through hedging instruments as part of their formal risk management policy. They try to smooth out the swings.
Okay, so they have mitigation strategies for those. What about broader macroeconomic, regulatory, and political risks? These can often be harder to predict, but can have a huge impact on long-term infrastructure projects that span decades.
Indeed, these are arguably some of the most significant risks for a long-term infrastructure operator like Ferrovial, precisely because they are harder to control. Their performance is intrinsically linked to global economic health. A major downturn would directly impact traffic volumes on their roads, reduce air travel demand affecting their airports like JFK, and could potentially lead to cutbacks in public infrastructure spending, which would shrink the pipeline of new PPP projects. Geopolitical instability can also disrupt supply chains, inflate commodity prices, affecting construction costs and project timelines. Things largely outside their control. And critically, regulatory and political risk is paramount. Changes in government policy, sudden shifts in tolling regulations, new environmental standards in their key markets. Any of these could materially alter the profitability and valuation of their long-term concessions. The stringent UK airport regulation, which clearly influenced their strategic decision to divest from Heathrow, is a prime example of this risk manifesting. A shift in regulatory policy directly impacted their profitability and strategic view there. While the current U.S. environment is highly supportive of PPPs, a significant shift in political sentiment, maybe against tolling or against private infrastructure ownership in general, could potentially jeopardize their future growth pipeline in that crucial market. These are the big, sometimes unpredictable macro variables. And lastly, just to round it out, there's always counterparty risk. They deal primarily with government entities for concessions. While generally considered low risk in their main markets, a severe fiscal crisis in a specific region could potentially affect a government's ability to meet its long-term obligations under a concession agreement. And then there's always key person and succession risk to consider, given the Delpino family's major shareholding and Rafael Delpino's central, long-standing role as chairman. These are all factors that a savvy investor or just someone wanting to be truly well-informed would need to keep in mind when looking at Ferrovial. #outro.
So pulling it all together, what does this deep dive mean for you, the learner, looking to quickly get up to speed on Ferrovial? We've unpacked a company that has strategically and quite successfully transformed itself, moved from being a traditional builder into a very sophisticated global infrastructure operator. The real story here, it seems, is their successful, disciplined pivot to a highly valuable, long-duration, inflation-linked concession model. And that laser focus on the high-growth North American market, it really does feel like a masterclass in corporate evolution, adapting to where the real value lies in today's economy.
Absolutely. We've seen how their disciplined capital allocation, marked by that active asset rotation, selling mature assets like Heathrow to reinvest in high-growth opportunities like the U.S. managed lanes and the JFK terminal, how that creates a powerful self-funding engine for future value creation. The sustainability of their cash flows, particularly from core assets like the 407 ETR, and their pioneering role in those dynamically priced managed lanes really underscore their unique competitive advantage in key markets. This profound transformation has arguably decisively improved their risk-return profile. It's created a more predictable, more robust business that seems strategically positioned for the future of global infrastructure development and operation. It's really a testament to long-term vision and focused strategic execution.
So let's leave you with a final provocative thought to mull over as you go about your day. Considering Ferrovial's innovative moves into things like smart roads, roads designed for connected and autonomous vehicles, and their ventures into urban air mobility through planning and building vertiports for electric aircraft. How might our entire concept of urban infrastructure and daily commuting fundamentally change over the next two decades, driven by this kind of private sector innovation and investment? Are we truly on the cusp of a silent revolution in how we move and connect within our cities? Perhaps one that companies like Ferrovial are quietly helping to build right under our noses. Something to think about.